Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Kale and Company, weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
A lot of interesting opinions about, you know, smoke screens and how the bigger fish to fry is the Biden crime family, a lot of which I agree with. But I was a little surprised to see so many people, conservative social media influencers, so to speak, on Tuesday when the verdict came in, where basically people were yawning and like, oh, this is not that big of a deal, wake me up, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, well, if Hunter Biden would have been acquitted, we all would have been shouting from the mountaintop. So what is your opinion on what happened, the way it played out, and where we are moving forward with not only the Bidens, but the Trump situation with all these cases and all the lawfare?
Well, I think the reason why a lot of people were yawning isn't necessarily that, you know, maybe they thought he wasn't guilty. Obviously, Hunter was guilty of lying on the federal background check form, you know, for firearms. And, you know, there's also a lot of conservatives who think that that form and that process in and of itself is, you know, a violation or an infringement on the Second Amendment. So, you know, I think a lot of people were like, well, if this is what we're going after Hunter for, when all this other stuff is on the laptop, you know, detailing all the crimes, if you want to call it that, bad misconduct and shady business dealings and corruption. Mm-hmm. But we're only going to go after him for the gun stuff. I think that's why people were less than pleased. You know, obviously, I believe Hunter is guilty of what he's been accused of here, lying on the background check form. And the silver lining for me was, well, now we know that the laptop, because it was used as evidence in a federal court case against Hunter Biden, now we know the laptop is legitimate. So why don't we go back into that laptop and look into the 10% for the big guy texts and phone calls and shady business meetings with Ukrainian energy companies and CEFC over in China and all of these other things. And here's the part that really, I think, kind of shows you where these cases are going with Hunter. They got him on the gun stuff. It gives the left the opportunity to say, look, the system is fair. Everything's good. You know, we go after our own. Nobody's above the law, right? That gives them the opportunity to say that. Meanwhile, the real damning evidence and the real material that's bad for Hunter and the rest of the Bidens is sitting on that laptop. And the only reason why federal prosecutors, the Department of Justice, et cetera, is not going into all of that is because not because it implicates Joe Biden, but because it directly implicates Barack Obama. And that's all this is here to save, right? So Spygate, the cleanup operation after the dossier and all that went through, that was a cleanup operation to protect Barack Obama. It wasn't to protect Hillary. It wasn't to protect anybody else. It was to protect Obama, who Peter Stroke, Lisa Page, those texts told you he knew about everything that was going on. Remember the text, POTUS wants to know everything that we're doing, right? He was in the loop. Mm-hmm. In this Ukraine situation with the Burisma board, Hunter Biden on the board, the prosecutor that's looking into Burisma, Joe Biden shuts that down. No one's going to look into that because it implicates Barack Obama. And Joe Biden even told you that in that clip where he's bragging on stage. I told them they got 6 hours or they're not getting the billion. And the Ukrainian president said, you can't do that. You're not the president. And I said, call him. Meaning if he put Barack Obama on the phone in that meeting, Obama would have said, yeah, Joe Biden has the right and he's doing the right thing to hold that $1 billion over your head. He knew all about it. And anything that threatens the left's sacred cow, their golden calf, Barack Obama, they're not going to touch. And so I think that's why a lot of people were upset. Not that Hunter Biden was found guilty here, because it's the correct finding. It's the correct ruling. It's the correct verdict. He lied on the background check form, said he wasn't addicted to drugs. He was smoking crack every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Everybody knows that because of the laptop and the pictures. But there, people are saying, well, if you're going to use the laptop and pictures to go after him for, you know, a clerical error for all intents and purposes and a lie on a background check form, then we should probably use the laptop, which you're all authenticating now, to go after the real corruption that's on there. And they're not going to touch it. That's why I think people are kind of yawning at this verdict, because A, Joe Biden can pardon him. And everyone's like, oh, well, he said he wouldn't. Right. But he said all those other things that we went through over there in the previous segment. You know, and it's not the corruption. It's not the crime. It's not the stuff that we want to see action taken on. You know, mm-hmm. I want to see the corruption addressed, not, you know, gun forms. Yep. Right. But now the left has the ability to say, look, the system's fair. You know, we went after one of our own. So I think it is a smokescreen. 100%. I think it's a smokescreen.
Sean Farris with us. Want to get your thoughts on a story we talked about earlier this morning. Politico with a story out talking about, you know, the way America and registered voters view Kamala Harris as a potential presidential candidate replacing Joe Biden at some point. And one of the damning numbers is she's actually polling lower than Joe is from a favorability standpoint, 42% to Joe's 43. And we know Joe is now at an all-time low net approval rating of 37%. And I threw out the idea that Joe will run, Joe will be the nominee, and in the event Joe Biden wins, I could see a scenario where Joe passes off the baton to Kamala very early in the second term, maybe even in 2025, year number one. Could you see that happening? Could that be a plot that the Democrats have? Because we've talked a ton about Gavin Newsom. The Michelle Obama thing has been put to rest. Do you think that's in play? And where are you at with the concept of a switch later this summer?
Well, I thought that's what was going to happen in the first term, to be honest with you. I thought Biden was going to, you know, if he won, he was going to pass some sort of meaningful legislation that, you know, checked off a few ESG, DEI boxes, and then, you know, right off into the sunset and give it to Kamala Harris. But she's so unlikable. I think the Democrats knew that if they just keep Joe in place and, you know, even make him almost a sympathetic figure, you know, he's just an old man. It's Grandpa Joe. You know, ha ha. He fell down again. How cool. Oh, wow. The Vatican. You know, he probably shouldn't have crapped himself, but that's funny. You know, your grandpa does it too, right? You know, so I thought that was going to happen in the first term. So I could definitely see it happening in the second term, especially like all the stuff that's going on with Joe now, you know, where he's like, he's getting lost more frequently and it's like more obvious, right? I mean, the scene outside that Juneteenth thing, I don't know what happened there. I mean, maybe he was doing a one cheek sneak. I have no idea, but he was literally frozen. I mean, like it frozen, like Madame Tussauds style, like wax figure. It was insane. So, you know, so this guy's not going to make it through another 4 years. But here's your problem. The Democrats have a likability issue. And the world hasn't even, like, the country hasn't even been fully exposed to Kamala Harris yet, right? So they would be smart to keep her under wraps until after the election and then make the switch, because there's nothing anybody can do about it. If it happens beforehand, she's going to get cooked. It's going to be complete, I mean, bad, right, with Kamala. So, but I could see him passing the baton if he wins again. I thought he was going to do that in the first term. So I would say it's even more likely now in the second term.
I want to get your thoughts.
If he wins, and I don't want him to win, obviously. I don't think he's going to win, but if he does, I could see it happen.
Gotcha. Well, I want to get your thoughts on the vice president watch for Donald Trump. I know you're a big J.D. Vance guy. The New York Post with a story today with not one, not two, not three, but four different sources saying that Tim Scott is fallen down the list. He's still on the short list. He's still technically, quote, top five, according to the story. But the presumptive front runner for many months, a lot of people thought was Tim Scott. We know that list has come out of Trump requesting financial records and documents. Right now, do you think that this is, if this report is true, is this now a two-horse race between J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio?
I think it's more than two horses, but I would certainly hope J.D. Vance is up towards the front of that crowd. You know, I think Vance is somebody, and I think I've said this before, I think he's somebody, it's interesting, right, with this, and I see people kind of trying to do oppo on him, right? Oh, he said Donald Trump was Hitler, and he called him a Nazi. Like, I know that J.D. Vance used to hate Donald Trump, I know that, but I'm not, that's okay to me, right? Because he came around, and he's doing a really good job now, which shows me that this is somebody who listens and keeps an open mind and has a level head and makes good decisions after realizing potentially that they may have made a bad decision, right? It also, for me, on if you put him on the ticket, he has an ability to campaign to say to people who don't like Trump, hey, I was like that once. I was where you are. You know, where you are at today, that was me 6 or 7 years ago. I used to hate the guy. Here's what helped me. And you can actually bring people in to the fold that way with a guy like Vince. You know, I think age, people knock him for his age. What is he, 39 years old? Mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing. This is not a, we're dealing with two presidents who are in their upper 70s or low 80s. I mean, this is not a bad thing that your potential, you know, torch carrier after the fact is a younger man. You know, it's also not bad that he's, you know, from the business world, served the country, right? He's got a great story, American dream. And it's also not a bad thing that he hasn't been in DC for a long time, right? Because it's less time to be compromised. Mm-hmm. I don't want some establishment person. I don't want a Rubio or a Scott. You know, I don't want an Elise Stefanik. I think she's great in some aspects. She's a great fundraiser. But I don't want somebody who's been entrenched for a long time. I want a guy like a Vance or a Vivek to be high up in this administration, you know, to keep that outsider vibe so that the influence of the swamp and the deep state is kind of cut off at the door. So that's why Vance is my guy. I certainly hope he's, you know, at the top of the short list. And we'll see what happens. I don't want a guy like Rubio. I don't want a guy like Scott. I mean, am I going to vote for Trump if he chooses them? Of course, right? Because I'm obviously not going to let Joe Biden win. But I want, and this is only if Donald Trump is thinking in these terms, right?
Sure.
Is his vice president the heir apparent, right? If not, if it's just Rubio is going to be in there because he wants to put Rubio in there, or Tim Scott in there because, you know, whatever, he likes Tim Scott. He's worked well with him on opportunity zones, his first administration, whatever you want to do, you know. Fine. I look at it saying your VP in this term might be your heir apparent. And I want it to be a guy younger, more in tune with where, you know, MAGA is now, like J.D. Vance versus a Scott or a Rubio.
Final one, Sean Farris joining us as he does every week. We are now officially 2 weeks out from the debate, 14 days from tonight, June 27th, Trump and Biden as currently scheduled. Greg Stocker would say in the promotion business, cards subject to change, right? Like the wrestling pay-per-view, the matches might actually change before we get to fight night. Do you think this is actually going to go off as scheduled, or could something pop up here in the next 2 weeks?
I think it's going to go off. I think the Democrats want to basically wind up Joe and put him out on stage and see what happens, right? They're obviously going to cook up a good cocktail for him. Hopefully keeps him awake the entire time. But I think this is kind of his sink or swim moment. Now, look, it's June 27th is the debate. 7 days after that, I think, is the 4th of July, which would mark the 1 year anniversary of when they found cocaine in the White House. So, I wouldn't doubt them finding more of it to get him prepped for this, prepped for this debate. And Hunter has to stay clean right now, apparently, with the court order and all that stuff. So if we do find it, it's definitely Joe's. And I think they're going to have to use something strong, for this debate, but I do think it's going to go off. I do. And I'm interested to see if Joe Biden comes at, Trump with the convicted felon line. Does Trump come back at Joe with, you know, the Hunter's a convicted felon thing? And are they going to be able to hit that point? Hit the laptop if I'm Trump, now that the laptop has been, you know, used as evidence.
Oh, yeah.
Hit it and say there's a whole hell of a lot more there. But I do think it's going to happen. I do think the debate's going to happen. And I think this is going to be part of, like, did they give Joe enough rope to hang himself, essentially? And we'll see. But I think the debate's definitely going to happen. I'm excited for it. I know I'll be watching it, and there'll probably be popcorn. So we'll see. I'm excited for it, though. I definitely think it's going to happen. Think it's going to happen.
Sean, did you see the video of Biden at the Juneteenth celebration where he's drinking that orange drink?
I didn't see the orange drink. I saw the frozen video. I didn't know he was drinking orange drink.
We were speculating what was in that orange drink. There was a lot of talk about maybe Metamucil or maybe some sort of cocktail or something that, you know, kept him awake.
Hopefully it wasn't Dulcolax, because he seems to have no problem doing that. So, but I don't know. Maybe it was one of those like Imodium, one of those like that stops you up for a couple of days. Maybe that was what was in there. They can't, because he's been on like a pooping spree. Like he's like carpet bombing everywhere he goes.
He really is.
Every time, like, you know, he's Normandy. Then there was like at the White House, he froze and made the I'm pooping face. Like, you know, it's getting kind of scary, so I don't know. Maybe they're trying to seal the dam there for a little bit. Like, hey, the Hershey Highway is seen enough, Joe.
Yep.
You know, I'm from Pennsylvania. Yeah, Hershey. I built it. Yeah. Talk to Trader Chocolate. Yeah, like, no, shh. I don't know what was in there. Maybe something to perk him up. It didn't work.
No,
if
it
was, you know, if he was drinking the orange drink before the freeze, that's Joe Biden, by the way, doing a Mitch McConnell impersonation where he just freezes. But yeah, seriously, it's true.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, but it didn't work. If that was beforehand, it didn't work. You know, if anything, it made him. They got the dosage wrong. It looks like
William Warner on the YouTube chat says Adderall. Maybe there was Adderall on there.
I think it's a lot stronger than Adderall. I think. Maybe that's all that was in the orange drink that didn't work. But I can tell you what, before the debate, there's going to be something serious because I mean, that guy's going to. This is a guy who's going to come on. He's not going to last. No wonder why they got to sit at a table.
Yeah, exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Double up the deep end.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Can you?
That's
imagine?
Right. Yep. The Pampers president. You know it. The Pampers president.
Great stuff as always, brother. Sean. Thank you very much. Sean
Farish. Guys.
We'll chat very soon. There he is, Sean Farish, joining us, who says, Trump should go hard on the laptop. I actually think if Dawn was brought in for debate prep with Trump with the laptop, she would say this.
We want to hit that hard.
Right, we're going to hit the laptop hard.
It's amazing.
Exactly.
By the way, programming note, Sean will be in for a couple of days in July. So,
okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Always good. He's always good. Part of the Kale and Company.
There you go.
It's Kale and Company on demand. From Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Let's get to our morning mystery movie clip.
And now, the morning mystery movie clip on Kale and Company, Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Now, can someone tell me why in 1975 we pulled our troops out of Vietnam?
The failure of Vietnamization to win popular support caused an ongoing erosion of confidence in the various American but illegal Saigon regimes.
Is she right? Because I know that's the popular version of what went on there. And a lot of people like to believe that. I wish I could, but I was there. I wasn't here in a classroom, hoping I was right, thinking about it. I was up to my knees in rice paddies with guns and Edwards going up against Charlie, slugging it out with him while like you were back there partying. Putting headbands on, doing drugs, listen to the goddamn Beatle album!
Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you? I mean, these kids, they were in grade school at the time. And me, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover.
Think you know what it is? Be call at 12 at 855-839-1210, and you could win this great prize.
Oh, God, do I love that movie. Caller 12, 855-839-1210. If you can identify that great movie that came out on this day in 1986, you will get a four-pack of tickets to see the Reading Phillies on Friday, July 5th. Oh, by the way, that's fireworks night.
Woohoo!
Caller 12, 855-839-1210. On this date in 1986, that movie came out. And it's one of my all-time favorites. We'll see if you can get that. And now, let's get to some of the news. It's time for a Dawn Stensland Big 3 at 9.
It's the Big 3 at 9 on Kale and Company.
Sponsored by Malvern Retreat House, former President Donald J. Trump set to make a rare appearance in Washington, D.C. to lay out his second-term agenda to allies, Republican lawmakers. And he is expected to hold a news conference this afternoon as well. As he's continuing to galvanize the party, bring forth party unity before, of course, next month's big convention and becoming the party's official GOP nominee. In Berks County, Trump's campaign opening a new outreach office in a heavily Latino Hispanic part of Reading, Pennsylvania. Mm. So Trump's campaign teaming up with the RNC and the Pennsylvania GOP to open a, quote, Latino Americans for Trump office in Reading.
Very smart. Very smart indeed. Now, this is what, the second, I believe, office? Because we have one here in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
This one, they had a reverend who was opening. In other words, when they were doing the opening the new outreach office, and he began with a prayer. Everything, you know, in Spanish, so Spanish, English. And this is the new office in Reading, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yep.
So we got
smart
that
move.
Going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very smart. And so number two in our big three, starting today, something new you cannot do in Wildwood. Backpacks now banned on the beach and the boardwalk. This starts today, by the way, from 8 p.m. this evening to 4 a.m. And that's through the summer. No backpacks. 8 p.m. to 4 a.m. beach or boardwalk. one of the new rules passed by city leaders just passed, which includes exceptions, of course, for things like baby bags, diaper bags, medical bags, small purses. So it's a little bit discretionary for police as they look at the backpack.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little wiggle room in there, I guess you could say. Ocean City passed similar rules last year, which somewhat helped. Violence and disorderly conduct, as you know, made headlines since Memorial Day weekend when, of course, Wildwood declared a state of emergency, shut down the boardwalk for hours. They've had a lot of violence fights. Ocean City, they had that stabbing that injured a teenage boy. So officials hoping to prevent teens from sneaking alcohol or any kind of weapons into these areas, violators will be warned first and then escorted by law enforcement or authorities to the nearest exit ramp.
Mm-hmm.
I should also mention this was going on as far as that vote yesterday afternoon. Earlier in the day, we saw local leaders, lawmakers, and police officials blaming, they had their own forum, if you will, their own meeting, blaming juvenile justice reforms enacted in recent years under the administration of Democrat and Governor Phil Murphy. They say created an atmosphere of lawlessness and disrespect for law enforcement among teenagers and young adults who feel there are no consequences for their behavior. So they're really pushing for parents to be held criminally and civilly in these types of situations.
Were you down the shore for Memorial Day weekend? Did you happen to notice a beefed up presence in police? Did you just, like, I don't know, take inventory or just say, wow, all of a sudden you notice more? Was anything that noticeable to you?
Not overlap. Well, Wildwood, less police. Ocean City, there are cops everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere. I don't even know how they hire all that law enforcement. They're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
On the boardwalk and just off the boardwalk. And then they close off the beach, you know, the entrances to the beach because they want people off the beach. And so Ocean City, the police presence is unbelievable. They hire all the extras for the summer. And then in Wildwood, I didn't see as much of a police presence, but I did not see a difference from last year, to be honest.
Okay.
As far as the policing.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things we talk about, the tools in the toolbox. I think the police, you know, are meeting with the officials saying, here's what we need. You know, here's what we need to be able to do our jobs. And essentially, they're looking for loopholes in these laws that they have to do the work around, basically.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So we got that one going on. If the Jersey Shore is not your thing, what about the Poconos? So many, maybe some of us here, love the Poconos.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of New Yorkers, that's the big thing we've seen. So many New Yorkers summering in the Poconos. And that brings us to former Congressman George Santos. He's currently facing federal and fraud charges. And he had to go to court to be allowed to vacation this summer in the Poconos. So a judge has granted his request to make excursions in the Poconos.
I should have asked Sean Farish about that because he always got a thought on Santos. I didn't even know about this.
So he can make weekly. He loves the Poconos.
Okay.
And he's allowed now, according to the judge, because he has travel restrictions under a condition of his release as he awaits trial. And so he's allowed to move within New York City, Long Island, D.C., as well as some other trips, according to the court records. But I had seen there, yes, they cleared him to visit the Poconos because he wanted to make weekly trips, I guess, on the weekends during this summer without submitting frequent travel requests to the judge.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have where in the Poconos. It's the general area.
Yeah, the general. That's a pretty big general area, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe some people we might know might run into one.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
If I do, I'll let you guys know.
Greg's going to see him, and he's going to be like,
stop disgusting up our country if you don't want to be here.
Exactly.
Well, we are sponsored by Malvern Retreat House. Maybe Santos needs this. Visit Malvern Retreat House, the nation's largest Catholic retreat house. located in Chester County, Malvern Retreat House, hosting men's and women's retreats, couples retreats, spiritual direction, recovery retreats, and so much more. Retreat from the noise. Hear God's voice at malvernretreat.com. Thank you, Malvern Retreat House, for sponsoring our Big Three.
All right, Dawn, thank you very much. We have our Morning Mystery movie clip winner on the line. We have Terrence in Perkasie. Terrence, good morning. What movie did we just play for you?
Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield.
That is correct. Say it one more time, Terrence. Say it.
Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield.
Yes, along with Sam Kinison. Congratulations. You've got the 4-pack for Reading Phillies tickets coming up Friday, July 5th.
Thank you so much.
You got it. Terrence in Perkasie, our winner.
I had always heard that Sam Kinison ad-libbed that entire scene with Rodney Dangerfield. It's amazing.
Yes.
I would love to play the unedited version because he's just so...
Over the top?
Yeah.
Yeah. Surprised he didn't drop dead of a heart attack in that scene. Lastly, we'll wrap up, and we're going to get to what's on the cut sheet part due in just a couple of minutes. But transgender swimmer Leah Thomas has failed in her challenge to rules that bar her from the Olympics. Obviously, a big story. We've covered it a ton here on the station. Former swimmer at the University of Pennsylvania, Riley Gaines, I'm sure very, very happy down in Nashville, Tennessee today, as this story came out yesterday. Leah Thomas lost her appeal against a rule from the World Aquatics governing body barring transgender women from competing in women's races. If you were tracking this story, Thomas filed this suit against the World Aquatics, which is the world governing body for water sports, including swimming, seeking to overturn their 2022 policy prohibiting athletes who have been through any part of male puberty from competing in the female category. The governing body added that it is, quote, dedicated to fostering an environment that promotes fairness, respect, and equal opportunities for athletes of all genders, and, quote, we reaffirm this pledge. Also, World Aquatics touting the ruling as a, quote, major step forward in our efforts to protect women's sports. So a big, big victory for biological females that want biological males to not be permitted to compete in their sports. And, of course, a lot of that falling under Title IX, which, as we know, recently the big guy pretty much nuked and obliterated. 855-839-1210 if you want to jump in. Cut sheet part due on the other side. It's Kale and Company on a Thursday morning on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and on the free Odyssey app.
Let's get to what's on the cut sheet part two.
What's on the cut sheet?
I do. What's on the cut sheet part two? Sponsored by Best Work Industries for the Blind. Best Work Industries for the Blind's e-commerce stores helping businesses succeed in all work environments. BestWorkSupplyCenter.com offers traditional office products, cleaning supplies, furniture, technology, and more with free shipping and next day delivery. Shop now at SaveAtBestWorkSupplyCenter.com. That's BestWorkSupplyCenter.com. Okay, so this is really interesting to me. So last night, Caitlin Collins sat down with Nathan Wade. We heard the jokes that faux President Trump, faux former President Trump, was making this morning, just about an hour ago, about Nathan Wade and Fannie Willis. When asked about the relationship with Fannie Willis and when it started, he started answering, and his counsel immediately interrupted. If you're watching, go over to YouTube, youtube.com/at1210WPHT. Nick, you can describe it for the people who can't get over there. Mm-hmm. Because they stop, the cameras keep rolling. Caitlin Collins is just kind of sitting there like, I guess we're going to kind of keep doing this.
Uh-huh.
It's super uncomfortable. Let's start here. Let's play this here now. Cut 14, Phil, go.
Democracy, the case will live on, kind of thing.
Just to clarify, when did the romantic relationship between the two of you start?
Yeah, so, you know, we get into, there's been this effort to say that, okay, these exact dates are at issue, and these exact dates are, I'm getting signaled here.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Look at this.
Can I go off mic for a second?
Yes.
Comes the lawyer. Comes the mic guy. One of the technical engineers. Collins is just looking down at her notes like, oh boy.
They're like, keep rolling, keep rolling. Talking.
Oh. Would she provide Mr. Trump the same easy wiggle room? I don't think so. Look at this.
They're huddled in a corner.
They're backed by a bookcase.
Yeah. Discussing exactly what he should say.
If you're ever in this position, unless they say this is off the record and we agree that we're going to cut the mics, there's no agreement here. This is fair game.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Everything okay?
Yeah.
We got to get our story straight.
Just to revisit the question, it was to clarify when the romantic relationship started and when it ended.
Sure. So, you know, I believe that the public has, through the testimony and other interviews, the public has a clear snapshot that this is clearly just a distraction.
It is not
a relevant issue in this case. And I think that we should be focusing on more of the facts and the indictment in the case.
Uh-huh. Well, I ask because obviously this.
Wow.
Let me just say this. You are a lawyer, and yet you need another lawyer to basically come in and bail you out of totally nuking yourself from a credibility standpoint, or from, you know, maybe this being brought up in a future trial, or, you know, perjury, or maybe he was going to give an answer that contradicts what he said in the past. I mean, something was wrong there where he was about to make himself look really, really bad. Dawn, your thoughts on this as somebody that's been in those, well, maybe not that setting, but interviewed somebody like that?
Obviously, he was starting to say something that the lawyer was like, whoa, what are you doing?
No, it's, like the third,
right?
It's like the third base coach. No, don't go. Stay.
Well put.
Put up the stop sign, right?
Oh, man.
It shows you. So this guy was tapped to be the lead guy to look into the former president of the United States of America.
Ding, 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 ding.
So just think about that. If this guy was, you know, a sharp, impressive attorney, and you thought, wow, this guy's really impressive, and I can see why Fonnie Fanny, you know, wanted to hire this guy. This guy is
dopey.
Could you imagine him being a public defender? And you're somebody who can't afford legal counsel, and you get a public defender, and you're sitting there 5 minutes in, and you're like,
yeah,
I'm going up, you know what's creek. This guy ain't going to get me off.
But it's such a great point that, like, you should, like, it's, I'm not a lawyer, and I know.
Yeah.
To, like, maybe not talk about this, or maybe say,
some discretion.
You know, yes.
I was waiting for him to look up for the moment like he did in the trial when he paused. And remember the speech bubble with Fanny and the Marvin Gaye? Let's get it on.
Man, wow.
What, I mean, this is, it's hard to believe this is America.
Yeah, it is. Mayor Pete was on with CNN yesterday.
It's been a while since we've heard from Pete.
Discussing all kinds of things. I believe they were discussing you guys know the story about Alito, Justice Alito and his wife, and how his wife was secretly recorded by some liberal activist. Berman, or whatever the guy's name is on CNN, asked Mayor Pete about that, and this is what he had to say. This is cut three. Phil, go.
I want to ask you very quickly about another subject, too. There was a secret recording made at a meeting where many Supreme Court justices and their spouses were, and Martha Ann Alito, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito, was discussing how she feels about apparently a pride flag that was flown not far from her house. Listen.
I want a Sacred Heart of Jesus flag because I have to look across the lagoon at the pride flag for the next month.
Exactly.
And he's like, oh, please don't put up a flag. I said, I won't do it because I'm deferring to you. But when you are free of this nonsense, I'm putting it up and I'm going to send them a message every day.
How does that make you feel knowing that the wife of a Supreme Court justice wants to send a message to people with a pride flag?
Look, I'm often reminded that the most important thing in my life, which is my marriage and my family and the two beautiful children that my husband Chasten and I are raising, that marriage only exists by the grace of a single vote on the United States Supreme Court that expanded our rights and freedoms back in 2015 and made it possible for somebody like me to get married. And, you know, Supreme Court justices have an unbelievable amount of power. And you know, by the nature and the structure of the Supreme Court, there's no supervision over that power. They are entrusted with it literally for as long as they live. And part of that trust is we expect them to enter into those enormously consequential decisions that, that shape our everyday lives with a sense of fairness. I also hope that most Americans can understand the difference between a flag that symbolizes, you know, love and acceptance and signals to people who have sometimes feared for their safety that they're going to be okay, and insurrectionist symbology. I'll just leave it at that.
Insurrectionists.
So how do you go from the pride flag or whatever to insurrection number one?
Yeah.
And I want to ask Pete Buttigieg, well, do you tell your spouse, your husband, how to think, what to do? Do you tell your husband to stifle, mm-hmm. and they're not allowed to fly whatever flag or have free speech that you think for your spouse?
Right.
Because I resent, as a woman and a wife, the implication of keep her in line, get your woman to behave.
Mm-hmm.
That's, to me, that's what that is.
Yeah.
And to think, like, my husband has his beliefs, I have my own, and I don't represent or answer to, you know, what he subscribes. You know, we do live in America in a modern day age.
Mm-hmm.
But basically they're saying, hey, Alito, get your wife to stifle Edith.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right. And I didn't hear anything from Alito's wife saying that she was going to, you know, vandalize a flag or anything, you know, that would insinuate hatred or anything like that.
No. Now, do I think it's kind of silly? Like, why are you triggered by a pride flag? Like, right. I don't get it, yeah. But that's her thing. That's just it. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. Do I think that her husband feels exactly like that? I don't know.
It's amazing how flags have triggered America.
Yeah.
Across the board.
Like, she shouldn't be so triggered. I don't know why. I don't understand why people are so triggered by this stuff. I don't. Mm-hmm. But
one more from Buttigieg, and then he talks about the Hunter Biden verdict. This is cut four, Phil, go.
So you are not a member of the president's family, although he has said you remind him of his son, Beau. I'm wondering what you think it must be like for the president now that his other son, Hunter Biden, has been convicted on federal gun charges as both a president on his way to Europe for key meetings.
And all right, do you notice the kid gloves
anchors
have for these guys? How does the justice's wife saying this, how does that make you feel?
Mm-hmm.
We know that Joe Biden, the president, compares you to his son.
Oh, my God. You would think that Joe's son is a 12-year-old. Mm-hmm. The way they treat everything. My God.
I just... Berman, is that this guy's name?
Yeah.
Berman. Like, I just... Come on, dude. Like, mm-hmm. God. Just enough.
And I have no problem with it. Ugh. If they were consistent. If right. that's how they word everything for every yeah. story, then I'd say, all right, they're consistent.
You would think the way CNN and MSNBC have covered Hunter's conviction after the verdict came in, you lost your dog or something. Yeah, it's just so nauseating. It's a grown man yeah. who's 54 years old.
How does that make you feel?
Who's given the world.
Yep. How does that make you feel? All right. That's what I have. We have to wrap
all right.
it up.
Quick break. We'll come
no,
back.
No. Let's just wrap
okay.
it up.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Dawn, what do we have lined up just about 11 minutes out today?
We have so much on a national level, international level, with this fleet of Russian warships reaching Cuban waters, a lot of tensions. We had Biden over in Italy, G7. We've got Trump in D.C. So much happening. And then here in Pennsylvania, obviously, Philadelphia City Council meeting today. So I'll update you on what they're working on down the Jersey Shore. Great lineup, great interviews. Stay tuned. We're live and local. Buckle in. It's going to be a crazy day. We're going to hear Trump speaking as well this afternoon.
Wow, cool.
Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. Dawn Show coming up at 10 o'clock this morning. And now we find out what happened today in music history.
What happened on this day in music history? Music history.
Today, Thursday, June 13th, we celebrate the birthdays of Rivers Cuomo from Weezer and Howard Lees from Heart. We also lost Elvis's drummer DJ Fontana on this day in 2018. Albums include Jagged Little Pill by Alanis Morissette in 95, Candy O by The Cars from 79, Texas Flood by Stevie Ray Vaughan from 83, Uriah Heep's debut in 1970, and For the Metalhead, Survive by Nuclear Assault from 1988. Also on this day in 70, the Beatles were atop the singles chart with A Long and Winding Road. In 69, the Stones introduced new guitarist Mick Taylor. In 1980, the film Roadie starring Meatloaf opened in theaters. And in 75, Peter Frampton played the first of two nights at the Winterland Ballroom in San Francisco. Recordings from these two shows were used as part of one of the greatest live albums ever, Frampton Comes Alive.
Yeah.
But lastly, based on all three of your music quote-unquote talk earlier, I actually had an idea. I reached out to Courtney Love of Hole, as well as Graham Bonnet of Rainbow, to possibly sing the brand new hit single, which could possibly be heard on one of our sister stations, Sucking the Rainbow Through the Butthole. For Kale Company. Oh, I am Phil Almquist.
Oh, yes, you are.
Oh, my
you
Lord.
Are Phil Almquist.
That is amazing. Amazing, amazing, amazing. By the way, somebody asked if when Phil gives birthdays, he can give ages. I agree with that. I think it should be, you know, so-and-so. Today is Tony Bruno's birthday. He turns 72.
Correct.
Tomorrow's Dawn Stenza's birthday. She turns
29.
You know what I mean? That's all I'm saying.
Exactly right. All right, let's find out who won Twitter.
Who won Twitter?
Ornery Hounds wins Twitter. He says, okay, I've had enough of Elvis for this decade. I was aware his ballads are dreadfully slow, but have painfully discovered his early pop tunes repeatedly use the same or a similar melody. It is numbing. Elvis must have been a well-spoken dolt, similar to a young Joe Biden.
Oh, boy.
Ornery Hounds wins Twitter on this Tuesday. Or Thursday, wherever.
Thursday.
One more day to go. 80% of the way down. All right, that'll do it for us. Stay tuned. The Dawn Show is up next. We're back tomorrow morning at 6, and this one's for Ornery Hounds on the way out.
I don't work on January the 8th, because that's Elvis' birthday.
Start your day with Kale and Company, weekday mornings 6 till 10, on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.